Welcome to this conversation. I'm your host, Teresa Keller. And I must say, seldom have I had a guest of such historical status as my guest today. And I am thrilled and honored to be able to talk to Betty Mae Fikes, who was recently at Emory and Henry speaking to the students here. And she is known as the voice of Selma, a singer who marched alongside Martin Luther King in the civil rights era. My guest today, welcome and thank you, Betty Mae Fikes.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's an honor to have you. It was an honor to have you on campus. And you were known as the voice of Selma because of your singing. But let's start with how it was that you became associated with Martin Luther King and his work.
Well, in the 60s, I had never heard of Martin Luther King. And even though there were things going all around the South and conversation about the changes and the bus boycott, trade. As a child, you hear these things but not understanding until 60, when it really took a turn, when freedom writers and freedom fighters started to come to Selma. And the question was asked if we knew whether or not our parents had the right to vote.
This was a big question for you, and it's something that you're passionate about now. They ask you as a child, did you know if your parents had the right to vote, and did you?
No, I didn't. I was under the impression if you were an adult, you were able to do all the things that the Constitution had given you the right to do. I didn't even know that there was such hatred going on in my community. I thought everything was just fine.
How old were you at this time, Betty Mae?
Well, this time and earlier when it first started, I was between the ages of 13 and 14 when the conversation started with the bus boycott.
You lived in Selma?
Yes.
So these conversations started. You're 13, 14 years old. Then what happened? Because somehow you wound up marching and working alongside Dr. King.
Well, and over here in the conversations, I wasn't a part of the conversations. I grew up in a time when children wasn't able to sit in a conversation with adults. I just overheard the conversation.
So you were to be seen and not heard.
Right. And it brought fear because some of the things I was hearing was things like, it looks like we're going back to 25. We're going to be in the soup line. Talking of war. And as a child, I didn't understand. But the day I was leaving the school of R.B. Hudson High, and this young man, Bernard Lafayette, had made it to Selma, and his car had broke down, and Charles Bonner, Clifford Hobbs, stopped to help him. And the question he asked them as they were trying to help him start his car was, do you know whether or not your parents have the right to vote? So in children, as being children, they told me who they had met and the question that was asked. So the next day, we all went to meet Bernard Lafayette. For months, I had no clue. Why are we being trained?
How did they train you to protect yourself?
Pull yourself in a fetal position. Ball yourself up while they're kicking and beating you. Now, I'm being trained for this, but did I think this would ever happen? No. We're children. Why are we down here in the First Baptist Church basement being trained to protect ourselves from violence? What violence? So I had no clue it's going to turn out any way that it did. Such a shock to me.
So you were trained. Was it the bus boycott that got you actually involved?
No, it wasn't the bus boycott. It was all the boycott that was taking place. Everything was coming into view. South was getting ready to be lit on fire. So we were being trained as children to protect ourselves from the violence when the time of the violence came. It didn't happen right away. So that's why I didn't think it was going to happen. But as soon as we started protesting, they had also told us, after protecting yourself, if you're going to protest, when they ask you, well, not ask you, but tell you you're under arrest, just to fall to your knees and let them carry you to the buses. Well, it didn't happen that way. We would fall to our knees, but here the sheriff's coming with cattle prods.
You said cattle prods?
Yes, that's what they used on the cows, the electrical. It's what they was using on the children in the 60s. So when you see this coming, you know what's going to happen. Are you going to sit there and let them stick this electricity in your body?
So, Betty May, are you saying that this happened to you?
Yes, not only me. Not only me. That's the thing of the South during that time. That was nice compared to a lot of other things that happened. This was just beginning of the fear that I thought would never happen, that I would never see. Who would think someone would do this to children?
Who would?
Well, it did.
When did you first protest, and when was your first walking alongside Martin Luther King?
There have been so many walks and so many protests since then. It's hard to recollect. And I tell everybody, it wasn't that I was just marching next to Martin Luther King. I was one of the ones that marched with King. When King got to Selma, the children had already organized. King came to Selma because most of all the children were in jail. And we have the courageous eight that had been fighting for freedom for Selma since the 50s and 40s. But no one knew of it. During slavery, silently, they were working, trying to make a change. And they're the ones that went to King and asked him to come to Selma. But when he came to Selma, most all the children was practically in jail.
Betty May, were you in jail?
Yes. I stayed in jail for so long with this old mean Judge Reynolds. That's the girl that do all the singing. Sent her back. I got sent back because I wouldn't say yes, sir, and no, sir, to him.
When you say the girl that was singing and you got sent back, you were the girl who was singing.
Yes.
And you were in jail as a young teenager.
Yes.
And what was it they said about send you back?
Well, because I would say yes, sir, no, sir, to him. So these were some of the things that he kept sending me back for.
Sending you back to jail?
Go to court, stand in front of him or sit in front of him for him to ask the ludicrous question and for me to say yes and no was an insult to him. Don't you know how to respect your elders? I only respect elders that are respectful.
Betty May, as a young teenager, where did you get that spunk?
I got the spunk because my mother died when I was 10 years old, and I was the only child. I never really had anyone to stand up for me. So between God and Betty May was the only choice I had. And that wasn't too much that you could say to an adult back then, being a child that did not get you into trouble. So by me not saying yes, sir, and no, sir, that got me into trouble. And he wouldn't just say, send her back, send that little black bee back. So I was already torn between love and hate. Already torn, not knowing which way to go, because all of a sudden, I'm a young girl without a mother and living in a home that I'm unfamiliar with. So I already had a struggle.
And then your personal struggle joined into a struggle. You were protesting because you did not have the right to vote.
And then we were children. We weren't even old enough to vote. But we weren't just only fighting for the right to vote. What we fought for back then was fighting for the right for a decent job, a right to send children to schools that they desired to go to. You know, the right to have the freedom that the Constitution had already given us the right for. Everything that we got, we had to fight for. And not only fight for, but to die for. That's why I get a little heated today when most of the people take everything that people died for granted today. Interstate transportation, someone had to die for that.
When you say interstate transportation, specifically, what was it that you were prohibited from doing?
Trailway buses, interstate transportation. Because we were black, even though we bought tickets to ride the Greyhounds and the Trailway, we were still not just still secondhand citizens. So we bought a ticket to ride a bus, but if there was no seat, we had to stand. And if we were already seated and a white person came in, we had to give up our seat. That took place again. Someone had to die for it. Someone was beaten for it. someone had to die for it.
We didn't even mention the fact that you couldn't go into a restaurant or couldn't drink from a water fountain.
Yes. It was just so strange for the water fountain to be so close, right next to each other. If you've been to get a drink, to take a drink, you're looking right in each other's faces. So we used to slip into Woodward just to see if the water tastes different, because no one had told us as children, colored and white. Colored drink from the right side, and the white is on the left side. Water tastes the same. We would slip and have someone to watch out for us, because it had to be a reason. We're trying to find out the reason that these things are being taken place. But you go in, the water tastes the same. What is it? We were just trying to get some kind of understanding.
And as a child, you couldn't imagine that it was because of the color of your skin.
Didn't even think it was like that. Everything to me was fine until the people of the movement started coming into the city of Selma. All these young, bright minds dropping out of college. And I'm sure today I can understand exactly how the parents felt. You raise money to send your child to school, and they drop out to go to different parts of the South to help people that didn't even know the circumstances that they were living under.
Betty, may tell us the story of the Freedom Riders from your perspective, what you saw and what you experienced.
Well, what I saw and experienced, I just never thought anything like that could ever happen. I didn't even realize it was that type of hatred in the world. First Freedom Rider, John Lewis, a bunch of young men and women getting together, putting their life on the line for this thing you call freedom, to ride from D.C. to parts of the South on this thing you call the Freedom Riders.
And these were African Americans and white college students?
Yes. Significant of it was to get on a bus and be able to sit anywhere without being escorted off the bus, to be able to sit and ride to wherever you bought a ticket to go. And it had been tried over and over again unsuccessfully. And this time it wasn't successful either, because the one that got to Troy, it was just such violence to the point where the bus driver, as soon as he pulled up, he pulled up into a mob. Bus driver jumps off. As he jumps off, the mob, by two by fours, locked the back door where the riders couldn't get out. Did the same to the front door. Then started throwing the firebombs into the buses. Now, I always, when I tell this, think to the person that I'm talking to. How would you have felt if you were sitting on that bus that particular day? What do you think would have been going through your mind as you faced death? So, sweetheart, there were so many times we faced death to the point like Diane Nash, when Kennedy sent his attorney general to Diane Nash to say, please stop marching. They're going to kill you.
Who was Diane Nash?
She was just a young lady fighting for freedom, going to Vanderbilt University. One of the ones, the creator of the sit-ins. Kennedy had sent his attorney general to Diane to tell her the president asked for her to talk to the people to stop marching because they were going to kill her. A strong young lady that stood up to this attorney general and said, we have already made our last will and testament. So that lets you know we were willing to die.
You did march, and then what happened?
We continue marching. What happened is what you happen to see today, that all the fight that we had to fight to get to this day where we are today. That's why I get a lot of, you know, uneasiness. Only because half of you don't even know the struggle. And half of you don't know that we're still in the same struggle. And would be there until there's a change made. And how long and how many people have to die? All of the fighting that we did in the 60s has practically been taken away. Look where you're standing today.
When you think of the things that have been taken away, I bet you think of assaults on the right to vote.
Well, I'm upset about that. They just gave a little bit back to Alabama. You know, and then if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat your history. And that's for black and white. King is gone. And today, half of the people don't even know anything about King. We just lost John Lewis.
You have repeatedly talked about how people lost their lives. Some of the Freedom Riders lost their lives. Can you tell that history for people who don't know?
Yeah, there were people that lost their lives. The reason I talk about it now, because for a long time I didn't want to talk about it, because I would get upset. See, this is why I really don't like to do interviews and things like that too much. Because for years, I suppressed all the ugliness. I suppressed that for years and didn't want to go back to it. Now, everywhere I go, people want to, Betty, will you do a book? When are you going to do a book? I really don't want to do interviews to tell the story. So how do you think feeling sitting down writing it on paper when memories just start rushing in like a wind that never stops? But I always say, this is my story. What would your story be? Because it's a rude awakening on the way for all of you, too, today.
I apologize for asking you to revisit these painful memories, Miss Betty Mae Fikes, known as the voice of Selma. When you were at Emory and Henry, you told a story about people, clearly white people, coming along to you where you were in protest at a counter and putting ketchup on your head and mayonnaise on you?
Oh, it was worse than that. They would pick them up off stools and throw them across the counter. Nothing to be done because we were nonviolent. You had to take it. Ketchup, mustard, anything they could find, salt and pepper. And you sit there. And not only that, cigarettes, as if your skin is an ashtray. Take a cigarette, smash it out on your beautiful black skin, and you sit there because you're nonviolent. People don't realize today that most of the people from the early 60s that fought in the civil rights movement was just like the Vietnam War. Their lives would never be the same again. That's why it's so hard to talk about. Who wants to tell a story how badly you were treated? Only because you were black. Never done anything to anyone, never heard anyone, never said anything to anyone. Only because you were black. Get out of here, nigga. I didn't know. The only reason I didn't know was because I was raised by strict parents. I didn't have to go to the black and white fountain. We had our own restaurant. Then the white people, they were nice to us until the movement started. But then when we came out as children, we thought our parents were cowards because they wasn't standing up. We didn't understand at the time if they had stood up, they could have lost everything they had. And the most valuable thing that would have been lost would have been their lives. Now, can you imagine, just because Freedom Riders are coming to your city, don't have hotels, they stay in your home, your light bill is paid, your gas bill is paid, but all of a sudden, just because the Freedom Rider is staying in your home, everything is cut off. So this is the price we pay for this thing you call freedom.
These Freedom Riders, when some of them were killed and their bodies dumped into the river?
Yes, the three, Strawner, Kane, Goodman, had came to Mississippi for the Freedom School and was arrested. Released late at night and was never seen again. The search went on for months until they started dragging the Mississippi River. And as they were dragging it, they could pull bodies out one by one. That's how many bodies of people they had killed. singers came up with a song. You can count them one by one as they were pulling them out. But when it got to five, they said, well, into the river they go. Six, seven, eight, nine, and ten.
I wish I could remember the name of the song that talks about Schwerner, Goodwin, and Chaney.
Well, into the river they go. Count them five by five. They won't come out alive. You can count them six by six. In Mississippi, they have got it fixed. And you can count them seven by seven. In Mississippi, it sure ain't heaven. And you can count them eight by eight. And they were thrown in because of hate. And you can count them nine by nine. In Mississippi, it ain't no crime. And you can count them 10 by 10. In Mississippi, you can't win. That's a song of dragging all the bodies out of Mississippi. You wonder when right will win.
And Betty Mae, tell us about the story of the Edmund Pettus Bridge. I know that it hurts you for me to ask to tell that story because you want us all to know, but what was it like? What were you doing and what happened?
Miss Maria Foster had said to me it would look good for me to be at the front of the line leading it, singing. That was the night before. And I was looking at her saying, well, it would look the same for you by you being older. Because I felt in my spirit that the next day was going to be a problem. But I didn't have a clue how big a problem it's going to be. So for Bloody Sunday, I had never witnessed anything like it before in my life. But from Brown Chapel to the middle of the Edmund Pettus Bridge, I turned and walked and walked. Then my mind told me to turn around and go back. I was on my way back to Brown Chapel Church when, I'm sure you heard the old cliche, the quietness before the storm. And by the time I put my foot on the first step of Brown Chapel Church, all of a sudden it felt like an earthquake. The ground under me started to shake. When I looked back to see what was happening, all I could see all of a sudden was people running all through the project, screaming and hollering, and hear the sheriffs and deputized police on horseback, riding and beating people like they were animals. You could hear the licks from old women, old men, being trotted down by these old men on horses. I had never seen that type of effect before in my life. When you don't care anything about children, you don't care anything about our grandmother, grandfather, older generation, and you could care less if a person was white. If they were white, they got it worse than we did because they were known as a nigger lover. So they got it worse. So this is what upsets me so today, that most people don't know this story.
The march was from Selma to Montgomery, and what was the goal?
Jimmie Lee Jackson had been killed. They were trying to think of something or some way to fight back because everybody had got in the position, especially the younger generation, that they wanted to fight. Jimmie Lee Jackson's mother had been killed at the mass meeting. This was the reason for the march from Selma to Montgomery. His mother had been, well, like they always did. They didn't care nothing about a woman. They didn't care anything about old grandmama. This particular night as she was leaving the church, she was being ruffled by police. Jimmie Lee went to protect his mother and was shot. They carried her to a hospital, but they didn't want to put their hands on her. We're not putting our hands on no nigga. So they had to leave that hospital and bring him to Selma to Good Samaritan Hospital, where he eventually died. This was the cause of us marching from Selma to Montgomery. It was to carry a casket and put it on the steps of the Capitol. Then we went from that to just marching from Selma to Montgomery. That was the reason for the march from Selma to Montgomery, Jimmie Lee Jackson's death, and nothing had been done about it. And as they were marching, as getting prepared to march, here's a lady that had watched on her television Viola Russo from Detroit, sitting that Sunday, watching Selma on television, news that night. Thank God, it's pretty much like today. Somebody filmed it. They didn't film it, but just on news. She's sitting home watching it and came to Selma the next day to hear. My classmate was riding with her. They going back and forth from Selma to people that was marching. We had tents set up, carrying food back and forth. On her way back to Selma, here Ku Klux Klan pull up beside her. And Leroy Moore, my classmate, and shot. They shot her and killed her. Nothing was done. Leroy had to play dead. Wow. These cold-hearted men, they're poking their shotguns all in his chest and all over his body to see if he had any movement. So he had to play dead, hold his breath. Nothing was done about it. That's what I mean when I get upset. I really don't like doing interviews because when I tell a story sometimes, I'm crying. A little 15-year-old got 20-some stitches. John Lewis, being unconscious.
So, Betty May, you turned around that day and it saved your life or saved you from serious injury, most certainly. But in a way, you have given your life for the cause of carrying the message.
Yeah, I had to. People should know the people that laid their lives down for this thing we call freedom. And they should really know the people whose lives will never be the same. How can you hate someone and never done anything to you just because of the color of their skin? Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up to freedom land. Mm-hmm.
My guest today, a figure of grand historical status in the civil rights movement. Thank you so much, Betty May Fikes.
Thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. Thank you.
You've been listening to this conversation. I'm Teresa Keller. You can join me Wednesday at 6 and Sunday at 2 here on WEHC and WISE. If you're interested in rehearing a program or sharing a program, you can find the podcast by searching WEHC Podcast, This Conversation. You can also go to the radio station website, WEHCFM.com, and you'll find a link to archives and podcasts. Thank you for joining me. Please stay tuned to this station.